Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community, taking a little time out in the day to begin with some inspiration to talk about current events and influenza, to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann's Organon of Medicine. Today is October 5th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 107. Thank you so much for joining me. I would like to remind everyone that this is simply a study session, just talking about news, and it's one person's point of view that any listeners who are in need of care should consult their healthcare provider. This is just educational information only. Please go to the Blog Talk Radio, Who's Reading the Organon, website and click listen, friend, favorite, and comment. You can listen to the old shows and download them to your computer, iTunes, or iPod. I start today with a puzzler. I would like you actually to take out a piece of paper, take a pencil or a pen, and write this down on the paper. 8 plus, which is that little plus sign, 8, and then the equal sign. 8 plus 8 equals 91. So here's the puzzle. How can you make that equation correct without changing it at all? It's a real good one. I'll tell you in a few minutes. Today's inspiration comes from Twitter. And we always need some inspiration, and Twitter is the place that I find it, where people are constantly telling their thoughts and what's on their mind. This one today comes from Quiet Mountain. The teacher said that I should, quote, learn to be unreceptive to external forms, unquote, which I thought was very wise until I stubbed my toe. I think that must have been some kind of a yoga teacher. The next one also comes from Quiet Mountain. And he quotes Albert Einstein, only two things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity. And I'm not sure about the former. And that was Albert Einstein. I guess he'd had it with everybody, huh? The next one is Victoria Zen Mode, who writes a quote from Jonathan Cozell. Pick battles big enough to matter, small enough to win. How can we make that some sort of a action in our lives? Today, I'm going to begin with the Organon of Medicine. I'm going to do it a little bit different and switch it up. Instead of the news, we're going to do the Organon first and then the news. So we begin with aphorism number 90. We've been talking the past week about the last few aphorisms dealing with how to take the case, how the homeopath sits with the patient, listens quietly and patiently with an open mind, with unbiased and being unjudgmental, and gathering all the information possible. And then after the person has just given everything that they need to say, that's when you fill in the blanks and find out what is missing from this, what doesn't make sense, what doesn't fit, and begin to ask a few questions, making sure that they're not leading questions, but really open-ended questions, and again, enable allow the patient to speak what is true for him or her. So here we have aphorism number 90, and he says, when the physician has finished writing down these particulars, he then makes a note of what he himself observes in the patient and ascertains how much of that was peculiar to the patient in his healthy state. That's the aphorism, and there is a footnote that reads as follows. For example, how the patient behaved during the visit, whether he was morose, quarrelsome, hasty, lachrymose, anxious, despairing, or sad, or hopeful, calm, etc., whether he was in a drowsy state or in any way dull of comprehension, whether he spoke hoarsely or in a low tone or incoherently, or how otherwise did he talk? What was the color of his face and eyes and of his skin generally? What degree of liveliness and power was there in his expression and eyes? What was the state of his tongue, his breathing, the smell from his mouth and his hearing? Were his pupils dilated or contracted? How rapidly and to what extent did they alter in the dark and in the light? What was the character of the pulse? What the condition of the abdomen? How moist or how hot? How cold or dry to the touch? Was the skin of this or that part or generally? Whether he lay his head thrown back with mouth half or wholly open, with the arms placed above the head, on his back, or in what other position? What effort did he make to raise himself and anything else in him that may strike the physician as being remarkable? That ends aphorism number 90. And so in the previous aphorisms, you were just taking it all in, just quietly listening very carefully, being attuned to what the patient was saying, their point of view, how they felt within, how they felt their own personal sensations and symptoms, and how they related to the doctor. Now, the second part that he's saying in aphorism number 90 is his observations. How did the patient appear to him? So whether the person said that they felt like they were slow, but they were talking extremely rapidly, there's a dichotomy there. There's something that's not exactly fitting correctly. Or whether the person appears to be happy and fine, and yet they, or rather the reverse, they're talking about being sad and they appear happy and fine. There's something there that you need to assess what is going on. And it's all of the different ways of appearance and their personality, which is what he's saying, their demeanor, whether they were quarrelsome, how they reacted to the doctor themselves. So if they say that they're very patient and they're very calm and they sat there quarreling the whole time, that you need to assess, the homeopath needs to assess what's going on, what are they really going to look up for this individual in the repertory and in the materia medica. In addition, he talks about what are the color of the face and the eyes, and even to assess the tongue. So this might bring us to the point that he's saying that you're going to do somewhat of a clinical diagnosis or a clinical observation, taking the pulse, taking the temperature, palpating the abdomen, you know, if there's something that indicates this needs to be done, like doing a general physical. And so since Hahnemann was a physician, a well-renowned physician, he taught physicians, he's writing the organon to physicians, this makes perfect sense that we need to take a clinical evaluation and get all the information in order to make an assessment of what needs to be done. Now we're going on to aphorism number 91, which reads, the symptoms and feelings of the patient during a previous course of medicine do not furnish the pure picture of the disease, but on the other hand, those symptoms and ailments which he suffered from before the use of the medicines or after they had been discontinued for several days. Give the true fundamental idea of the original form of the disease. And these, especially the physician, must take note of when the disease is of a chronic character and the patient has been taking medicine up to the time he is seen. The physician may, with advantage, leave him some days quite without medicine, or in the meantime administer something of an unmedicinal nature, and defer to a subsequent period the more precise scrutiny of the morbid symptoms, in order to be able to grasp in their purity the permanent uncontaminated symptoms of the old affection, and to form a faithful picture of the disease. So here, he's aphorism number 91 has been led in from aphorism number 90, which had stated that the physician ascertains what is peculiar to the patient in his healthy state. So if a person has been taking maintenance doses of medications which have side effects and alter his general state or the state before taking medications, he's saying you must relieve the patient of these medicines. And in some cases, probably in today's type of medicine, which is quite addictive and can have tremendous withdrawal symptoms, that this would be done under special care. You don't just drop a medication. You go through a procedure where it is slowly taken down a little by little. And at that time, then you can reassess what the condition of the patient is, what changes in their mind and their body and how they're behaving and reacting and speaking and all the things that he has elicited for us in these previous aphorisms, so that you would retake the case. I would imagine you would definitely have to have the patient come in after being withdrawn from medications and retake the case and see what is different from before and after. Were many of the symptoms due to just the medicine that was being taken? And now I'm going to give you the answer to the puzzler, which was I asked you to write on a piece of paper the number 8 and the symbol plus and the number 8, the symbol for equals, and the number 91. 8 plus 8 equals 91. Has anyone figured out what to do to make that a correct equation without changing it at all? Well, the answer, my friends, is to just look at it upside down. So basically, you're not changing the equation. You're changing your perspective on the equation, on the facts. And this is what we ask you to do if you are a skeptic. This is what we ask you to do if you are unsure. This is what we ask you to do if you don't understand and you need more information and you want to investigate or try something new. So the answer becomes the number 16 equals 8 plus 8, which is true. And that is how that puzzler ends up. And now we're going to go ahead and talk about the influenza vaccination, influenza in general, what is going on. You will be hearing a lot about influenza, especially if you are in the United States. There's talk about it everywhere, on the radio, on the television, wherever you go. If you even go into a shopping center or a drugstore or a pharmacy, you're going to hear over the announcements, get your flu vaccine. And I feel as if everywhere I turn, there is an outright or a subliminal message being produced in the general population. And I think what they're getting at is the public must have a very short memory span, and the government is counting on people having a short memory span. The government believes that advertising, promotions, flooding the market with the same message by celebrities like Dr. Oz and others will entice people to action to get their flu vaccine. by providing convenient locations and recommendations for all state employees, I can tell you that I have received phone calls, personal phone calls, automated phone calls, and letters in the mail to the effect that we should all and all state employees should get their vaccination for the upcoming flu season. And they make it easy to get this shot. They're hoping more people will line up for the jab than they did last year, because last year's swine flu hype and called the so-called pandemic went bust. There were less people affected than in a normal flu season. The people were not swayed to take the vaccination, and they left the pharma, the big pharmaceutical companies, and those who had purchased, the governments who had purchased many millions of flu doses, leaving them holding the bag with unused drugs. And, you know, they only last a certain length of time. On September 10th of 2010, the WHO, the World Health Organization, the Director General, Dr. Margaret Chan, announced that the H1N1 influenza event had moved into the post-pandemic period. The influenza situation update will no longer be posted on the Disease Outbreak News website. The Global Influenza Program will continue to monitor the influenza activity worldwide on a weekly basis, and every 2 weeks, a World Health Organization WHO influenza update will be published on one of their links. So they're saying that the pandemic is over for 2010 for H1N1, yet you will learn that they have put this piece of this H1N1 into the 2011 influenza vaccination. So why are they doing that, especially when there have been many spokespersons, physicians and otherwise who are experts in epidemiology, who have said that there has been problem with that particular vaccination. The case for reforming United States emergency health laws is something that our member, Alan Phillips, legal advisor, says that the 2009 and 2010 swine flu pandemic is officially over, but many serious risks remain, not so much from the flu, but from the flu vaccines and America's emergency health laws. Current laws allow states to mandate fast-tracked, untested emergency vaccines and other emergency medical protocol without exemptions during declared emergencies, despite the existence of safer, viable alternatives. Those who refuse vaccines can be quarantined in government facilities. This report, and he has a report on the www.pandemicresponseproject.com/swineflureview.html. So on that website, you will be able to see a document with what the problems are and the need for our public prompt, proactive legislative solutions. We are the answer. We must educate ourselves and stand up and speak out and let other people know. Now, Mike Adams of Natural News has done so, and he says that vitamin D provides 800% more protection than the vaccine does for influenza. A clinical trial led by Mitsuyoshi Urashima and conducted by the Division of Molecular Epidemiology in the Department of Pediatrics at the Ikei University School of Medicine, Minotoku in Tokyo, found that vitamin D was extremely effective at halting influenza infections in children. The trial appears in the March 2010 issue of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. There was a little outcry that the swine flu vaccination may have been linked with narcolepsy, autism in children with mitochondrial dysfunction and brain development effects. the news, recent news, says that they have negated that link, but there were some people, and I think it's still up in the air until they do their final probe analysis. Europe is also probing the swine flu shot and the possible narcolepsy link, and that drug was from GlaxoSmithKline, and the problems with the Pandemrix vaccine. The flu vaccine vaccination ban goes national after fever and convulsions in children is a report by Chris Thompson that was done on April 23rd, 2010. So at that point, which is not that many months before this date right now, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, 7 months earlier, the Australian's government decided that after dozens of children showed up in the Australian hospitals with convulsions, vomiting, and seizures following the seasonal flu vaccine, the Australian government took the unprecedented step of banning the flu vaccine for their children in Australia. And there will be a link to the www.cdc.gov/flu-about-disease, which will tell you what the government in the United States is recommending. And basically, they're recommending that everyone 6 months and older should get a flu vaccine as soon as possible, as soon as the vaccine is available. And we know that it is because we're hearing about it everywhere we go. They tell us that the flu is unpredictable, and it's likely that the 2009 H1N1 viruses and regular seasonal viruses will cause illness in the U.S. this flu season. That's interesting. The 2010-2011 flu vaccine will protect against three different flu viruses, the H3N2 virus, an influenza B virus, and the H1N1 virus. They say it caused so much illness last season. I didn't think that it did. I thought it caused less illness than a regular cold influenza season. So I don't know where they're getting that line from. The influenza is a contagious respiratory illness caused by influenza viruses. It can cause mild to severe illness and at times can lead to death. Well, you know, as I know, that it's not so much the influenza itself that leads to death, but the complications in those who have been taking lots of drugs and have weakened immune systems, and the elderly who are in nursing homes, or the very young who have weak immune systems. Some people, like what the kind that I just mentioned, are at the higher risk for seasonal flu, serious flu complications. And they're telling us, the CDC is telling us, that the best way to protect and prevent yourself is by getting a vaccination every year. And as I recall, I think they were even talking about boosters. In 2009 and 2010, a new and very different flu virus, H1N1, spread worldwide, causing the first flu pandemic in more than 40 years. And this was because, I believe, it's not stated on the CDC, that they redefined what a pandemic was, or they used the value, the fact that so many countries were involved in the spread of this disease, not the number of people that were affected, but the widespreadness of it. And the CDC expects that the 2009 H1N1 virus will cause illness again. And it's very interesting after they said that the WHO announced that it was now downplayed. So they say, please get your vaccine early. And they also tell you it is the most important step in protecting against flu viruses. I really find this quite amazing because, you know, there are other ways of protecting yourself. The ways that we generally learn about are to cover your nose and mouth with a tissue when you cough or sneeze, remember they were saying last year that you should sneeze into your elbow, and then you should throw the tissue into the trash after you use it. Definitely wash your hands. Keep your hands clean with soap and water. Do that in running water for a few minutes. Make sure they're clean. They're also telling you to use an alcohol-based hand rub. That's not something I typically do, and I also do not use antibiotic soap because that means that you're going to let the bacteria become resistant and grow into a more virulent disease, which we already have a problem with that. They also say avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth because the germs spread this way. We naturally do that. We naturally rub our eyes or touch parts of our face. So that's why it's a good idea to wash your hands, especially after you have been in contact with other people and other sick people. And if you are sick with a flu-like virus, a flu-like illness, the CDC recommends that you stay home for at least 24 hours after your fever is gone, except to get medical care for other necessities. Your fever should be gone without the use of a fever-reducing medicine. And I'm so glad that they say that, because we know that you're not supposed to take aspirin, which could cause other complications when you're having a fever. While you're sick, limit your contact with others. And then that is what they recommend on the CDC site. They say to take flu antiviral drugs if your doctor prescribes them. And if you get the flu, antiviral drugs can treat your illness. Antiviral drugs are different from antibiotics. They are prescription medicines, and they are not available over the counter. Antiviral drugs can make the illness milder and shorten the time you are sick. This is what they tell us. And they also tell us that the flu-like symptoms include fever, cough, sore throat, runny and stuffy nose, body aches, headaches, chills, and fatigue. Some people may also have vomiting and diarrhea. People may be infected with the flu and have respiratory symptoms without a fever. We only have just 2 minutes left, and I didn't get to speak at length about a particular issue I wanted to talk about, and that is the use of vitamin D when there's an epidemic in influenza. And there is an article I would really like to read by J.J. Cannell. He is a well-known individual. He is a doctor of medicine at Atascadero State Hospital in California, and if you just put his name, C-A-N-N-E-L-L, into the Google or any kind of web search, his name is going to come up, and you're going to learn so much about vitamin D and how it can prevent the onset of flu and cold and many other problems for you. So I'm going to leave you with that, and we'll do the reading on vitamin D tomorrow. I want to thank everyone for listening to the show. It's been great. I've been studying a lot. I've been learning up about this. And remember, if you do have a problem, contact your healthcare provider for proper care. Take care of yourself by getting out there for 15, 20 minutes of good sunshine a day. Eat well, rest up, meditate, reduce your stress, get in good company with good friends who are also health-wise. Think good thoughts, have good intentions, and help your friends. Share and keep on learning. Keep on studying the Organon. I thank you again for listening. Have a really great day. Take your Organon off the shelf and read it.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopath Debbie Brooke on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.